been a long time, I bet, probably about a week, since you've entered into the Bhagavad Gita. Is it a fact? Right? With all the Harinam festivals, there were no Bhagavad Gita classes last night, where there was no Bhagavad Gita class. So a whole, I don't know how many days, at least five, possibly more. No class. More. 1 week. That's a long time. In the Kali Yuga, Mandaksu, Mandamataya, and everybody's short brains are not so good. Okay, so what's the 15th chapter about? Don't even try to answer. Don't even think about it. What's the 15th chapter about? Thanks. Purushottam Yoga. Okay, you want to unpack that a little bit? Okay. All right. More? Tell me more. It's about a tree. Okay. It's about a banyan tree. Why a banyan tree? Why a tree? Okay, so what does that have to do with a tree? Okay, great. That's a start. So this is not a regular tree. This is a tree that's reflected upside down on the water. What's the water? No? What's the water that it's reflected on? The tree is the, you know, we see it, and the roots are going the wrong way because we're looking at the reflection. But what's it reflected on? The tree in the analogy is reflected on water. Okay, but what's analogous to the water? No. What's analogous to the water? Somebody? Okay, let's talk about reading Bhagavad Gita. It's reflected on desire, right? The tree is reflecting on desire. Because of our desire, the spiritual world becomes perverted. When it reflects on our desire, it becomes the material world. And through the agency of our desire, everything becomes distorted. And instead, when we're not wanting Krishna, then we're wanting material things. Then we get entangled in the bottom, which appears to be the top. We get entangled in the bottom of the tree or in the branches of the tree and all the different twigs of the tree and the leaves of the tree, which are compared to so many other different things in the 15th chapter. And then we have to get out of the tree, but it's not so easy because we're like completely entangled in this tree, which is reflecting on our desire. So Krishna tells us that we have to do something with this tree. What do we have to do to it? We have to prune it, feed it, water it. What do we have to do to this tree?
Cut it down.
Cut it down, yes. With what? The weapon of Sudarshan Chakra. No. What do we have?
Detachment.
Okay, so we have to cut the tree down with the weapon of detachment because then our desires become purified. If we become detached from the material world, then we're not, the desire dries up, you know, so then there's no reflection. Then we enter into the spiritual realm. So that's the first five verses of the 15th chapter. What's about the rest of the 15th chapter?
Spiritual world. It's one verse.
Okay. Yes, it's true. It's one verse. What else is in the 15th chapter?
Super soul is mentioned.
Yes. That's a safe bet, right? Somewhere in there must be a mention of Paramatma. What else is in there? Ladies? Redeem our race. What else is in the 15th chapter?
The constitutional position of the living entity, and he is a part of the supreme.
Okay, that's a safe answer also. that has to be in there somewhere. Okay. Okay, so I think you need to read it again. Okay, you need to like read it again and understand. So let's just go back to the beginning of Bhagavad Gita. Is that scary? To go all the way back to the beginning of Bhagavad Gita? What's happening in the Bhagavad Gita?
Arjuna doesn't want to fight.
Okay. He doesn't want to fight. Where are they? Oh, they're in a battlefield of Kurukshetra. Who's they? Okay. So they're having this conversation because Arjuna is stating that he doesn't want to fight, and he's giving a lot of good reasons. And it's particularly relevant for this verse that we're supposed to read today, although I feel funny about reading it because there's no history here. there's a big historical gap between where we are and where we should be. But in the 15th chapter, in the 15th verse, which is the one we're reading, Krishna, he gives a very, very important point. And one of the points is that he makes in that verse, we'll read it in a minute, is that he's the source of the Vedas. And yet, when Arjuna is giving him arguments about why he doesn't want to fight, he's giving him arguments from the Vedas. So then Krishna is stating here that I'm the source of the Vedas, by the way. And I know the reason that the Vedas are written, and I know the purpose of the Vedas, and I'm the ultimate result of studying the Vedas. So we're going to understand that there's a connection there that takes it all the way back to, you know, the whole thing is connected. One thing that needs to be really understood is that the Bhagavad Gita is not a book. It's a conversation. It's a conversation between Krishna and his devotee. And that conversation has many nuances. If you go deeply into the Bhagavad Gita and you also study the commentaries on the Bhagavad Gita and Prabhupada's purports deeply, you'll see that the people who are absorbed in the actual dialogue that takes place between Krishna and Arjuna, they're understanding a lot more about what's going on here. Because in a conversation, you know, in communication theory, we learn that there's only a very small percentage of communication that takes place in words. 7%, actually. 7% of communication takes place in words. And then another percentage, 37, I believe. Is it 37? I think 37% takes place in how something is said. Because if I say, I love you, but I say it sarcastically, then the words written on a paper will say, I love you, but if you hear, I love you, or you think I love you, then, it's a different purport there, and it comes through, and the rest of communication takes place in body language. So when the devotee is entering into the mood of the Gita and the mood of the discussion between these two great souls, when you hear Sanjaya at the end, you know, he's saying his hair is standing on end when he's just thinking about this conversation that he witnessed. Not only did he hear it, but he witnessed this conversation between two great souls, Krishna and Arjuna. In that story that we read in Chaitanya Lila about the illiterate Brahmana who was reading Bhagavad Gita upside down, or, you know, there's so many permutations of that story, what was wrong with the way he was reading it. But people were making fun of him because he didn't know what he was doing, right? But he was crying when he was reading the Bhagavad Gita. And Lord Chaitanya, in seeing him, could understand that despite the fact that he couldn't read the words, he knew what was going on. And so he spoke to him, and he said to him, you know, I see you're crying, and you're not able to read Bhagavad Gita properly in Sanskrit or whatever the verse is. You don't. But still, you're crying, so what's that about? And so he described that when he would read, when he would think about the Bhagavad Gita, some people say when he looked at the cover, but I doubt he was looking at Bhagavad Gita as it is. So I don't think Krishna and Arjuna were on the cover. but in his heart, in his mind, he was reading Bhagavad Gita and he was envisioning this conversation between Krishna and Arjuna and thinking of Krishna's mercy on him as Bhaktivatsala, as the servant of the friend of his devotee. We talked about vatsa this morning, that loving relationship, caring relationship. And thinking of that caring relationship, that Krishna was so kind that he took the position of Arjuna's chariot, and he also sensed that, of course, he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he's sitting in everyone's heart, but he was acting in a lila, and that lila was that he was perceiving some kind of weakness in Arjuna. That was manifest in his not willingness to fight, which became fruitful because he brought him in a certain place on the battlefield that made Arjuna kind of have a nervous breakdown. Right? That's what happened. Arjuna kind of had a nervous breakdown. I can't do this. I'm looking at my grandfather and my guru, and there's no way I'm going to participate in this fight. And, you know, then he came up with all these reasons. But so this loving relationship between the devotee and Krishna is being developed throughout Bhagavad Gita and culminates periodically. You hear a verse that reminds us that that's where we're going. But in the end, that's what we understand, that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and our business is just to surrender to him. Arjuna's business is just to surrender to him. Fighting is incidental. The thing I happen to want you to do right now is fight. But if I said don't fight, or I said do something else, you'd do that. Because in the end, when Krishna says to Arjuna, did you listen carefully? Which, by the way, I don't think you did. But did you listen carefully? Did you understand everything I said? And Arjuna's answer is yes, I understood everything, and now, Karishye Vachanam Tava, now I'll do as you say. Whatever you want, I'll do it. So if we understand the purport or even the words of this particular verse, 15:15, then if Arjuna could have gotten it here, and what to speak of in the last verse of this chapter, which is verse 20, also it's there that if I just serve you, if I just know you, if I just understand that you're the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and with a loving relationship between you and I serve you, then my life is perfect. No more problems. Nothing to be in anxiety about. Everything becomes okay, whatever it is, even if it doesn't look okay. We were talking last weekend, maybe two weekends, I can't remember. It gets blurry when I'm moving around. But we had Nrisimhadeva's appearance day when I was in Serbia, and they celebrated on Sunday, so I was speaking on the Nrisimha's appearance day, and just think about Prahlad, who was, you know, in such a precarious situation. Again and again and again, he was in such a precarious situation. But he was so in love with Krishna, and Krishna was so in love with him, that there was an intense reciprocation there, and he was so confident that his love for Krishna and Krishna's love for him would be okay. Whatever had happened, it would be okay, that he could weather any storm. He could weather, you know, being stepped on by elephants and chindi bindi chop him up, pierce him, and all kinds of horrible things. He could tolerate it all. And he could come out on top because he was completely convinced that Krishna was the Supreme Lord. Whatever he wanted, he would do, that Krishna was everywhere. And this is basically what Krishna is saying here. So let's chant this verse. I think, not there, but I think everybody has a Gita, or everybody knows the verse. This is a memory verse. Everyone should know this verse. Okay, so do we chant responsibly, or what do we do here? Do we usually chant responsibly? Okay. Sarvasya cha ham hridi sannivishto. Matak smriti jnanam apohanam cha. Vadaischa sarver aham eva vedyo. Vedanta krit veda vit eva chaham. Somebody else want to chant? Sarvasya chaham nirisani vishto Matatsmriti jnanam apohanam cha Vedaischa sarve aham eva vedyo Vedanta krit veda vit eva chaham Sarvasya chaham ridisani vishto Matatsmriti jnanam apohanam cha Vedaischa sarve eva vedyo Sarvasya chaham vidisani vishto Mritak smritir jnanam apohanam cha Vidaischa sarve aham eva vedyo Vedanta krit veda vit eva chaham Vaishnavis? Sarvasya chaham ridisani vishto Matak smritir jnanam apohanam cha Vedaischa sarvar amahem edavedo Vedanta krit veda vit eva chaham Sarvasya of all living beings cha and aham I hridi in the heart sannivishta situated matak from me smriti remembrance jnanam knowledge apohanam forgetfulness cha and vedai by the Vedas cha also Sarvai, all, aham, I am, eva, certainly, vedya, knowable, Vedanta krit, the compiler of the Vedanta, the Vedavid, the knower of the Vedas, eva, certainly, cha, and, aham, I. Okay, so the translation of this verse. I am seated in everyone's heart. From me come remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. By all the Vedas, I am to be known. Indeed, I am the compiler of Vedanta, and I am the knower of the Vedas. The Supreme Lord is situated as Paramatma in everyone's heart. So there, someone said there was talk about Paramatma. There it is. In more places than one, in everyone's heart, and it is from him that all activities are initiated. The living entity forgets everything of his past life, but he has to act according to the direction of the Supreme Lord, who is witness to all his work. Therefore, he begins his work according to his past deeds. Required knowledge is supplied to him, and remembrance is given to him, and he forgets also about his past life and what he ate for breakfast. Thus, the Lord is not only all-pervading, he is also localized in every individual heart. He awards the different fruit of results. He is worshipable not only as the impersonal Brahman, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the localized Paramatma, but as the form of the incarnation of the Vedas as well. The Vedas give the right direction to people so that they can properly mold their lives and come back to Godhead, back to home. The Vedas offer knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. And Krishna and his incarnation as Vyasadeva is the compiler of the Vedanta Sutra. The commentation on the Vedanta Sutra by Vyasadeva is the Srimad Bhagavatam and gives the real understanding of the Vedanta Sutra. The Supreme Lord is so full that for is so full that for the deliverance of the conditioned soul, he is the supplier and digester of foodstuff. That was the last verse. And the witness of his activity, and the giver of knowledge in the form of Vedas as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, the teacher of the Bhagavad Gita. He is worshipable by the conditioned soul. Thus, God is all good. God is all merciful. Let's talk about that for a few seconds. So in the verses that preceded this, there were a series of verses, five or six verses, in which Krishna describes to Arjuna how he's responsible for all the major life-giving things that happen in the jiva and in the world. So he's the maintainer, that the things we take for granted as happening kind of automatically, they're actually happening. Hare Krishna. They're actually happening by Krishna's arrangement, or he's taking care of them. That he's the splendor of the sun. He dissipates the darkness of the whole world by the sun. So, and nothing can live without the sun. So he's the essence of our life, because without sun we don't survive. Even we know that in certain parts of Europe, in certain parts of the world, not just Europe, the sun doesn't come out very often in the winter. And there's periods of lengthy darkness, and people become very sad, right? They become depressed. There's a very high rate of suicide. So even for our own clear consciousness, we need the sun. And Krishna is the sun. And he's the splendor of the moon, and it's explained that the moon is responsible for the vegetation and the tides and so many other things. And then he talks about he keeps the planets in their orbit. He's the fire of digestion. So we can't even eat without him. We can't digest anything without him. He keeps us alive, really. And he's the life in the things we eat. Also, the vegetables that we eat, the fruits that we eat. He's the life-giving force within those things. So he helps us in that way also. And so now he's saying that when you change your body, when you go to a different body, he gives you the necessary information so that you can function in that body. Dogs know how to be dogs from birth, and cats know how to be cats, and you know, and cats don't say bow wow, and dogs don't say meow, and everybody's got it together, right? You know, and the reason they have it together is because the super soul was in the heart, and he's giving them remembrance, just as much remembrance as they need. And because the pain, Prabhupada even explains elsewhere that the pain of living in the womb and going through the hellish experience of being born, and we'll read about that in a little while in the Judd Bharat Leela, that's very described, that birth situation, that the living entity would die. It wouldn't be able to survive if it could remember all these horrible things. So Krishna gives forgetfulness. He takes it away if it's necessary. And in this case of Bharat Maharaj, he gives him remembrance so that he can achieve spiritual perfection. So the Krishna is helping us along in our spiritual life by giving us both remembrance and forgetfulness, and by giving us the way to get out of the material world, which is the Vedas. So he cares so much about us, and this is what Prabhupada is saying here. Thus, God is all good. God is all merciful. Because he gives us everything we need from the very remembrance, the core thought process that allows us to function within the body that we're in. We're in Slovenia or in wherever else we are, in the weather that we're living in, and in the situations that we find ourselves. We kind of programmed to know how to function. To be a monk, there's an overabundance of monkeys in Vrindavan. And if one wears glasses, it can be quite traumatizing. So they were making some move to remove the monkeys from Vrindavan. And there was some political talk about it because some lady died. She got scared by a monkey on the roof and she fell off the roof, and that was caused a big stir. And so then they thought, we have to do something about these monkeys. They've reached a critical mass and we've got to do something about them. But the Goswamis in Vrindavan complained. They said, these are our ancestors. And this is their last birth. They're born as monkeys in Vrindavan, and now they're going to go back to Godhead. So we can't take them out of Vrindavan. We have to leave them in Vrindavan because this is Krishna's arrangement. So they'll, and they're just acting like monkeys, actually. We're the one who are interfering with their situation. But Krishna is arranging for them to act like monkeys and know what to do and figure it out. So let's read on again. Antak pravishta shasta gyanam jananam. The living entity forgets as soon as he quits his present body. But he begins his work again, initiated by the Supreme Lord. Although he forgets, the Lord gives him the intelligence to renew his work where he ended in his last life. So not only does a living entity enjoy or suffer in this world according to the dictation from the Supreme Lord, situated locally in the heart, but he receives the opportunity to understand the Vedas from him. I was in Vrindavan in 1974, and at that time, Srila Prabhupada was there. He came. Actually, I was in Delhi first, and he came to Delhi, and then he went to Vrindavan. And at that time, there was no Krishna Balaram temple. The temple wasn't built yet. Part of Prabhupada's house was built. And we were living in some houses along the Parikrama Marg, some ashrams that were there. And Prabhupada was lecturing in Fogel Ashram. Fogel Ashram wasn't what Fogel... So if you went on Radhanath Swami's yatra and you were sitting in this huge building which was covered and blah blah fancy rooms and everything, that's not what Fogel Ashram was like in 1974. It was just a small dharamshala, and it had a Shiva Linga in the middle of a courtyard, and that was where Prabhupada would sit to speak. And he would come there in the evening, and we would all go there from wherever we were staying, and Prabhupada would speak there. So Prabhupada had met me in Delhi. I was cooking for him actually there. And when I was there, he asked me about my son. My son was 4 at the time. And he said to me, is your son here? And I said, no. And I told him that my husband was coming. He said, you should have your husband bring your son. So my 4-year-old son came. And one day when Prabhupada was at this Fogel Ashram speaking, my son was playing mridanga and dancing. He was a very good mridanga player at one point. And he was playing mridanga and dancing. So after the kirtan was over, Prabhupada gave him his garland. And he said to him, just see this boy, he's dancing before me, and playing this mridanga. But how could he do that without some experience from a previous life? It's not possible. And then he told the story about how Parikrama Maharaj in the womb saw Krishna. And then for the rest of his life, he was always looking for that Supreme Personality of Godhead. He was searching for Krishna because he remembered from his, within the womb, that personality who had protected him from the Brahmastra. So in that story, Prabhupada is referring to this idea that Krishna gives us the remembrance so that we can pick up from where we left off. That's what he was saying about Nirmal Chandra. He was saying that he's picking up from where he left off. And the things that he's remembering this skill of playing the drum. And we see in other situations, even in non-devotee situations where people have remembrances from previous lives. So Krishna is providing that remembrance, and he's also he's giving us the ability to get out of the material world by giving the Vedic knowledge. If one is serious about understanding the Vedic knowledge, then Krishna gives him the required intelligence. We understood that from the 10th chapter, right? That Krishna says if somebody, people are enthusiastic about devotional service, they take up the process of devotional service, and the reciprocation is that Krishna from within the heart, he dispels the darkness and he gives the torchlight of knowledge. He awakens knowledge and understanding from within the heart. Why does he present the Vedic knowledge for understanding? Because a living entity individually needs to understand Krishna. Vedic literature confirms this. Yo sau sarvar vadir giyate. Giyate means to sing, to chant. In all Vedic literature, beginning from the 4 Vedas, Vedanta Sutra and the Upanishads and the Puranas, the glories of the Supreme Lord are celebrated. By performance of Vedic rituals, discussion of the Vedic philosophy, and worship of the Lord in devotional service, he is attained. Therefore, the purpose of the Vedas is to understand Krishna. The Vedas give us direction by which to understand Krishna and the process of realizing him. The ultimate goal is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Vedanta Sutra 114 confirms this in the following words, Tat Tu Samanvayat. One can attain perfection in three stages. By understanding Vedic literature, one can understand his relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By performing the different processes, one can approach him. And at the end, one can attain the supreme goal, who is none other than the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So here, Srila Prabhupada is talking about Sambandha Abhideya and Prayojana, that we first understand by reading what our goal is. By hearing, we understand what we want to achieve. And then we get the process, how to do it. And then it's our responsibility to carry out that process. And when we seriously carry out that process, then both from within, from Krishna, and from our own, by our work, Krishna is inspired to give us his mercy, and then we attain Krishna consciousness or pure devotional service. We attain love of God. So that combination of our working, doing what we're supposed to do, inspires Krishna to, from within our heart, give us the knowledge by which we can come to him. There's a nice analogy or a story, little story about a young man a young boy who is trying to lift some weights that are very heavy, that are very big, and they're very heavy. And he's trying to pick them up like anything. He's trying to lift them. And his father is about to walk out the door, and he's, you know, wearing a suit and tie. He's going to work. He's got an attaché case, but he sees this boy, his son, trying to lift the weights. So he goes behind him, and he puts his hands over his, and he picks up the weights. So the boy is thinking, wow, I picked up the weights. My father helped me a little bit, but, you know, really, I picked up the weights. But if you think about it, who picked up the weights? Who picked up the weights? Huh? The father. The father picked up the weights. Do you think so?
I think actually the son.
The son picked up the weights.
They both did it, but the son kind of did it first because his intention was.
His intention. So the father saw the desire of the son, and because he saw the desire of the son, he got involved and he helped him lift the weights, or he lifted the weights. But if the son hadn't had the desire, the father was just about to go to work. He wasn't going to stop out and work out for a few minutes before he walked out the door, right? But because he saw the son's desire, the intensity of the son's desire, he was inspired to get involved. He was inspired to take action and lift the weights. And so we have it with the Supreme Lord that this argument goes on. Is it works or is it mercy? But it's, you know, and in the Vedic conception, they call it, is it monkey or what's the other one? Cat and monkey? That the cat is picked up by the cat, the mother cat picks up the kitten, and the kitten doesn't have to do anything. And with the monkey, it's a different thing. If you ever watch the monkeys in Vrindavan jump from one wall to the other, the baby monkey is holding on for dear life. You know, if he doesn't hold on, he falls off. The mother just flies. So it's his responsibility to hold on. So is it the monkey or is it the cat? And actually, it's both. Because we have an endeavor. We have to do what we have to do. That's our responsibility. The abhideya, the action, has to be carried out by us. And then Krishna gets involved. He comes into our lives and he gets involved with us. He adjusts the karmic situation so that we learn the lessons we need to learn. He moves us along, just like he did with Arjuna. He put him in a very particular position so that he would be confused, that his heartstrings would be torn, and then he would have a nervous breakdown. And then Krishna could speak to him and clarify his confusion. And the acharyas say that even if Arjuna, at the end, when Krishna asked him, have you understood everything? Is everything, do you get it? If he would have said no, then we would have maybe had 32 verses to learn, 32 chapters to read in Bhagavad Gita. So fortunately, Arjuna got it. But the desire, the inspiration for the Supreme Lord to get involved comes from seeing the sincerity and the determination of the devotee. So the more he sees that in us, then the more he involves himself. Another story is Draupadi, who was trying by her own power to hold the sari on in the assembly of the Kauravas. When maybe you know the story, when Draupadi was being disrobed by Dushasana in the assembly. And so she was calling out, but she was trying to hold on to her cloth. She was being embarrassed in front of so many people. It was a horrible situation. But finally, she couldn't do anything. She held her arms up and she yelled, "Hey, Govinda!" And then Krishna reciprocated by just giving unlimited amounts of cloth. And Dushasana kept pulling the cloth, pulling the cloth, pulling the cloth, until he became exhausted. He couldn't understand what was going on. Everybody was witnessing this miracle. And it allowed them to kind of snap out of it, to understand that we can't let this go on. This is not an ordinary situation. So there's a story that Satchinandana Maharaj tells. I don't know where it came from, except that it came from him, in that Krishna is sitting with Satchabhama, and he's playing chess. And every once in a while he gets up like he's going to leave, and then he sits down. And then he gets up, and then he sits down. And then he gets up, and then and she says to him, "What are you doing?" And he says, "Well, my devotee is in great distress, and she calls out for me, and I get up to go to help her, but then she tries to do it herself, so then I just sit down." And then when she yelled, another part of the story is that he says, "I can't get there fast enough anyway." She said, "What do you mean you can't get there fast enough? You can go on Garuda. Garuda travels at the speed of the wind, faster than the mind. He can go so fast. And then not only that, but you're sitting in her heart. You can just come out, right? You don't have to even get there." And then when she called out, he said, "Now I can go, because now I can get there on the trail of her tears. Then I can go fast enough." So because her intensity of desire in her, she gave up the effort on her own to deal with the situation, then Krishna took over. So we can do what we can do. We have to do what we can do. But ultimately, the devotee takes shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So just to finish the purport, in this verse, the purpose of the Vedas, the understanding of the Vedas, and the goal of the Vedas is clearly defined. So this verse, if we can just believe it, if we can just believe this verse, we can have firm faith in this, the purport and the import of this verse, then we would be able to go forward without having any kind of anxiety at all. Because our anxiety comes from our attachment to the material world. Our fears come from our lack of faith in the fact that Krishna is doing everything that needs to be done, that he's going to take care of everything, that he's maintaining us, and that he's got everything under control. So when we think that Krishna doesn't have everything under control and we need to keep it under our control, that's when the trouble starts. And that's when we feel anxiety, because we feel like we're trying to deal with it and we can't control it. And no matter what we're doing, it's slipping out of our control. And so we become very anxious. But if we understand that we do what we can do, but ultimately Krishna is in control. We're entitled to the action, but not to the result. That's not, we have no control over that result. And then we can become very peaceful, and we can move forward in our Krishna consciousness. So I'm going to stop there, and then if there's any questions, then maybe we can have some discussion. Yes. Hare Krishna.
I was thinking about that point that animals know how, you have enough awareness to know how to do things, but people, or some people, like less than animals, they don't know what to do.
Well, they know what. Well, they know what they're doing based on their previous karmas. So they're acting like fools, or apparently as they don't know what to do, because in their previous lives, their previous karmas are putting them in ignorance. They're being born in ignorance. In the 16th chapter, you'll read later, that Krishna puts them into more and more hellish situations because of their hellish behavior. So because they're engaging in demoniac activities, they're perpetuating animalistic behavior within the human body. So they don't know what to do in the sense of the right thing to do if they were spiritually inclined, but they're not spiritually inclined. They're materialistically inclined. They're not even demoniac in their inclination. And so the result is that they act in that way. But Krishna does say that he provides them with the knowledge if they want it. It's just like you get something from the store and it comes with instructions, right? But if you don't read the instructions, then you'll try to put it together. Maybe you won't get it, and maybe you won't, right? So it's much easier if you read the instructions, but you don't read the instructions and then you're on your own. And in spiritual life, we can only go so far on our own. We can't even get to the ultimate conclusion on our own. It's not possible. But the living entity has to be willing to hear in order to get the highest knowledge. Krishna is kind. He provides it. But in order to get it, the living entity has to take it. He has to reach for it. And ultimately, he has to get guidance in order to understand it. So those people who are acting in animalistic ways, they're not seeking knowledge. They're just functioning on their own, on their previous karmic adhikar, the rights that they've earned from their previous karma. And that's not necessarily very good. It's not very intelligent, necessarily. So they're born into demoniac families. They're trained from birth to act like animals, and that's what they act like. And then there's the influence of Kali Yuga, which is also making things, exacerbating things. Because the three modes of material nature are very intense, and the modes of ignorance and passion are very strong. And so if I don't have any control of my mind and senses, I don't have any understanding of the modes of material nature and how they work, then I'm just pulled away by the lower modes. And it's as if I don't have any control. It's forced to act helplessly. That's what Arjuna says. Why is it that even I do know, right? Arjuna is saying, even I do know what I'm supposed to do, but still I'm forced to act helplessly. And that's Arjuna, what to speak of Kali Yuga now, here, Slovenia, us, whatever. That forced by lust and lust alone, which is that attachment, that desire that the tree is reflected on. That's what causes us, forces us to act. Unless we fight against it, it's just like if you've ever ridden a horse, which is another analogy in the Gita, is that, you know, if you've ever ridden a horse, then if a horse spooks when you're riding it and you don't have control, you're gone. That horse now is, you're not the rider anymore. You're just a passenger. And that horse is, it'll just take off. And if you don't have control, then the best you can hope for is that it'll throw you, or you'll go under a low branch and you'll get knocked off. Otherwise, you just run until it's exhausted because you can't do anything about it. So that's what it's like being in the material world with the modes of passion and ignorance pushing. If you don't have any control, you're just going on life after life like that. It's not a very pretty picture. But that's what happens. And that's why the devotees feel so much compassion. That's why Prabhupada felt so urgently to come and try to give this knowledge. Because the devotees, it's also said here that the devotee is more kind than the Lord sometimes. The Lord makes you reach, but the devotee tries to give it to you. Right? The devotee goes far and wide and says, here, take this. This is the knowledge that will get you out of this suffering condition. Please take it. Whereas Krishna says, you know, you have to make the effort. The devotee, I'll come and give it to you. I'll go across the ocean and I'll live in a foreign country and I'll go at 65 years old because I feel so much compassion. Even though I don't even know you and I don't know what the situation is, but I feel so much compassion for the people in the age of Kali, and New York is such a place where Kali exists, that I'll go there and I'll give Krishna consciousness. I'll try. So this is Krishna's mercy. And that's what he's saying here, that the Lord, that's what Prabhupada's saying, that Krishna provides the information because he's merciful, because he wants us to get out. But we have to take the information. And even when the devotee comes, we still have to take it. But he tries to figure out new ways. There's a nice story about Prabhupada. I was in New York and some devotee came with a plate of white balls, you know, maybe you heard already, and he gave Prabhupada one, took Prabhupada one, threw it in his mouth. And Prabhupada said, "Simply wonderful." And so the devotee said, "Well, Srila Prabhupada, we're giving these out on the train. When we go out, you know, to preach, we go on the train and we give them out to people." He said, "Then you are simply wonderful and they will become simply wonderful." So the devotee is so simply wonderful that he distributes simply wonderfuls. And so even I don't want to know anything about Krishna, eventually, if I eat enough simply wonderfuls, then I'll become inspired. Somebody told me that Halava is the number one devotee maker in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So that, but it's hard to distribute on the train. It's easier to give so simply wonderfuls. Anybody else? Yes, Prabhu.
Thank you. Sometimes devotees face some mental problems, and they try through different techniques to seek the origin of that in, I don't know, previous lives. And I wonder, should we actively pursue if this should have some therapeutic meaning, this problem, search of these problematic impressions, or should we depend on Krishna's mercy, like in everybody else? How is this proportion of?
Well, they're not necessarily mutually exclusive.
Yeah, I don't know, but you know, in this particular field of mental health and these techniques, what should we do? Should we
there's many different techniques involved. And some may be more in line with Krishna's will than others. Actually, I don't know if you're familiar with Kushagrata Prabhu. Do you know Kushagrata Prabhu? Kushagrata Prabhu was one of my godbrothers, and he was a translator of Sanskrit and Bengali. He translated many of the Acharya's books. When he first came to the temple in Buffalo, he was completely catatonic. That was in 1969. He would just stand in the hall and stare. And we'd have to, like, move him for him to move. Sometimes for hours and hours he would just stand in the hallway and stare. And he wasn't, like, completely lucid. You couldn't have a conversation with him very often. Not always. He would go in and out. And then he became a very powerful devotee, and he did a lot of really wonderful service. He left his body in Vrindavan not too long ago, actually. And he was always eccentric. He was always completely eccentric. But still, he was able to find his place and function within the family of devotees and do some really valuable service. There's other devotees, too, that went to, that had some psychological problem and went for some kind of care, different kind of care, and it helped them. It helped them to reintegrate, to be able to integrate better in the devotional family. Prabhupada also said everyone's crazy to some extent or another. He told a story about a lawyer who got his client off the hook because they were trying to say that the person had done some crime because he was crazy. And he said, well, everybody's crazy in some way or another. You know, they asked a doctor as an expert witness, is the man crazy? He said, well, everybody, my experience is that everybody's somewhat crazy. So, but But, you know, in your question, it's an individual thing. It's just like for each of us, if we have any medical challenge, we have a wide variety of options. Some involve drugs, and some involve surgery, and some involve different tortures of various kinds, and diets, and all kinds of things. So we have to make a decision, or someone on our behalf has to help us make a decision. I found, like, even with minor health, relatively minor health challenges, that every devotee I knew was a doctor. It was amazing. I had so many doctors, I didn't know what to do with them all. And every one of them had a different cure for me. He's shaking his head, yes, right? It's amazing how every devotee is a doctor. You didn't know that, right? But every devotee is a doctor. So you have to, ultimately you have to make some decision, or someone who you're intimate, you know, you're close with, has to help you make the best decision so that you know what will work for you and what will allow you to go on in your devotional service. Because you'll enter from one level of craziness into a worse level of craziness if you leave the practices of devotional service. So you don't want to put yourself in a situation where you can't practice devotional service. And, you know, you want to find a practitioner who really knows what they're doing and who has some empathy for the process of devotional service and will encourage you to maintain your practice. Because your practice will really keep you from becoming totally crazy. You know, because if you start thinking you're this body and that the purpose of human life is to make your body happy, then you're totally crazy. And that's a fact. So it's one kind of crazy is another kind of crazy. But the second type of crazy has more long-lasting ramifications, life after life, birth after birth, you know. So you have to see. Prabhupada didn't encourage, and most of and our acharyas, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, didn't encourage either dwelling on the past. So processes which take you back and make you open up wounds in the past. Actually, in 9/11, you know, 9/11 in America when they blew up the Twin Towers. One thing that most people don't know is about 9/11 is that 9/11 provided psychiatrists and psychologists, people studying mental health, it provided them with a huge sample of people who had a major trauma all at one time. And so many, many researchers went into New York at that time and they were doing research on the people who had been traumatized by that experience one way or the other, either by losing a loved one or by being in the building or in the area or seeing the explosion or whatever. And the overwhelming conclusion was that people who were able to let it go and go on with life healed much faster and much better than people who were, by their practitioners, being told to relive the experience and reprocess it and go through it again and again, that made their healing much slower. So of all the available interventions, I would say that our acharyas wouldn't recommend meditating on bad things over and over again. It doesn't do you any good.
I mean, not over and over, but sometimes maybe there is a need for finding an origin. Once.
Well, that also can be discussed philosophically, but because where is the origin? You know, that's a whole other thing. They only know the origin so far as they can see, but there's other origin, and we can understand that from the scripture. So you have to make this decision. This decision is a personal decision for every individual. You have to decide what works for you. But whatever it is that you choose, don't choose anything that will take you away from the practice of Krishna consciousness. That's the bottom line. But it's a personal decision what mode of, you know, there's a gazillion different options, and I can't tell you which one to choose. But in general, lamenting over the past or dwelling on the past is influenced by the mode of ignorance. And so it's better to let it go as quickly as possible. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Anybody else? Okay, we should. Yeah, sorry.
Thank you for the lecture. I'll ask, for example, we are telling that we have some attachment because and fear inside us, and we want when we want to control. When we're frustrated, when it's not what we want, and it's for Krishna's will. That's, and I was thinking about, for example, how to see in the man who scream at you, who makes something that you feel uncomfortable, Paramatma, actually how to see Krishna in this situation. When you are feeling grief, I mean, that how you can digest this fear and this attachment?
Well, you have to do more than digest it. You have to deal with it. You know, the fact that I'm afraid to cross the street because I might get hit by a car doesn't mean that I cross the street with my eyes closed, and it doesn't mean that I don't cross the street either. It means that I learn how to cross the street in such a way that I won't get killed. So if you're in a dangerous situation, you have to figure out how to get out of that dangerous situation. That's a lesson to be learned. Sometimes Paramatma is seen in the sense that you're being trained up. You're being taught something, and you have to learn that lesson. So you're learning some lesson. It doesn't mean that you have to be a whipping stick, a post or something like that necessarily. So you have to do what you have to do. And you have to see a person influenced by the modes of material nature. I mean, how you, like, for instance, look at Prahlad Maharaj, the way he looked at Hiranyakashipu. Now, you're not going to sit there and, you know, be willing to get stepped by elephants or pierced by tridents, because that's just not going to happen. You should get yourself out of there. But at the same time, you see with compassion that this person is suffering. This person is suffering because of his own attachments and his own lack of ability to control the lower modes of nature. And so with a compassionate attitude, you can wish him well, but you have to understand what your ability is to do something about it. And the first principle is you have to save yourself. And Prabhupada said that. In more ways than one, he said that the first principle is that we have to save ourselves. Spiritually, our first business is to save ourselves. If we, in the name of preaching, we don't carry out our own sadhana, it's only a matter of time before we fall down. So our first principle is we have to save ourselves, which means we have to chant our rounds, we have to read the books, we have to do what we have to do to remain spiritually strong. Otherwise, if we just say, well, I'm a preacher, I'm just going to go out 24 hours a day or whatever it is, and I don't have time to chant my rounds, then we're going to suffer later and we won't be able to do it in the long time. And physically also we have to first principle, save ourselves. Prabhupada wrote Jai Pataka Maharaj years ago, 1969, Montreal or Toronto, wrote he was sick, and he was saying that he was trying to go on preaching even though he was sick, and Prabhupada said, you have to take care of your body. I'm very disturbed to hear that you're not taking care of your body. Go take care of you. Go to the doctor and find out what's wrong and take care of your body. So, you know, sometimes we take this idea that we're supposed to just accept what comes to us, but it's not a passive acceptance. It's an active thought process. We have to use our intelligence also. Okay, I should stop. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.